Author Malcolm Gladwell likes to take a fresh look at things that we think we know about. He's written about how little things can have a big effect, how we make decisions, and now the incorrect assumptions we often make when we talk to strangers. Malcolm Gladwell's book is Talking to Strangers, What We Should Know About the People We Don't Know. It's now out in paperback, and Robin Young spoke to him in September of 2019.
And Malcolm, you say, we view strangers as simple to understand, but ourselves, we're complicated, we're nuanced.
Yes. When it comes to judgments about our own character and behavior, we are willing to entertain all manner of complexity and subtlety. When it comes to making those same judgments about others, we are depressingly simplistic.
We default to not being able to believe that somebody could be a bad person. You write about a famous example, British Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain meeting with Adolf Hitler, 1938, convinced he wouldn't invade Czechoslovakia. But you say that this idea that we default to assuming that people are telling us the truth is also the thing that lubricates the wheels of society. And we couldn't function if we were constantly doubting people.
Yeah, the book is built in part on the ideas of a really brilliant psychologist named Tim Levine. And he says that occasional deception is the price of civil society. In other words, we shouldn't be so quick to condemn ourselves or others when we're victims of deception. We should instead understand that that's just the unavoidable side effect of something really important about human nature.
Well, because if we were doubting everybody all the time, we'd be like a man that you describe who ends up barricading himself in his home because he feels he's going to be murdered by Bernie Madoff or Bernie Madoff supporters because he's the one who figures out that Bernie Madoff is committing a huge Ponzi scheme. But once, you know, having used his skills to figure that out, he's a tortured person.
Yeah. The world doesn't work if we're all filled with so much suspicion that we're capable of seeing the truth about a person like Madoff. It's a very interesting and kind of subtle trade-off that I wish we had a better understanding of.
Yeah. But one of the things he tells you, he doesn't want to meet somebody face-to-face because he's afraid that he will go to that truth default, that he'll try to see something good in that person. And you profile a double agent for Cuba. Nobody suspected her, the double agent, Ana Montes, possibly being a spy because they didn't want to see it.
Yeah. And when you realize that even an agency like, for example, the CIA, which is presumably one of the most sophisticated group of people around and who have devoted enormous amounts of attention and energy and resources to the detection and uncovering of spies, when you realize that they are so easily duped, then you understand the kind of what we're up against as human beings. And that, there are many things, many conclusions one can draw from that. One is it raises the question of why we bother spying. If it's impossible to detect spies, shouldn't we just get out of the business of spying? And that's actually a very, very serious point. But the larger point is that we have to, I think, come to grips with our fundamental weaknesses when it comes to making sense of strangers. We cannot swagger into our confrontations with strangers with the confidence that we can make sense of them in the moment. There just is no evidence that we are good at that task.
Well, there's so much here. The sitcom Friends makes an appearance because you asked to study the faces of the stars of the sitcom Friends because the actors' emotions, and when you think about it, it's true, they are so telegraphed, so transparent is a word that we hear about a lot. So you see when somebody's angry, upset, scared, and yet that's not how real life is. We don't express ourselves that way.
There's a profound difference between fictional representations of emotion and real life representations of emotion. And when psychologists have studied this, they found that only very infrequently is there this perfect match between our expressions and our feelings. Now, that doesn't matter when you're dealing with a friend because we become aware of their idiosyncrasies. When it comes to strangers, we don't have that kind of inside knowledge. And that opens the door to all manner of misinterpretation.
Well, and the secondary theme maybe could also be that how theories about interacting with strangers might work in one context. If they're abused or taken out of that context, they don't work. And that takes us to the police work in Kansas City. when the thinking was, let's couple, you know, tons of police officers knocking on doors, but also, you know, pulling people over in just the few blocks where the crime is. And people will welcome it, and they did, and the crime will fall, and it did. But that theory of pulling people over as many as possible for the smallest of infractions was then picked up by this Texas police officer who pulled over Sandra Bland in a completely different area, suburban area. And, it, you know, as you say, he'd done this maybe every 15 minutes for the past several hours. He'd been just pulling people over, abusing that coupling. And you say not understanding Sandra Bland.
Yeah. The Sandra Bland case is really about the same thing I've been talking about in these other cases, which is it is an example of our failure to communicate effectively with strangers, that the cop epically misunderstands Sandra Bland, and that has catastrophic consequences. When we talk about the Sandra Bland case, the most common explanation is that it's an example of what happened when racist ideas find their way into law enforcement. And I think that's absolutely true. But what I wanted to do was to dig a little deeper and say maybe this is an example of how some fundamental ideas that we have in our head about how to deal with strangers are ill-suited for the real world. So transparency, that I've just been talking about, is one of them. The cop makes assumptions about how Sandra Bland, who she is and how she's feeling, based on her emotional expressions and body language. That is, when it comes to dealing with strangers, an exercise fraught with danger.
Well, we go back to all the points that you've been making all along the way in the book, the research that shows that we can't pick out the person who's lying and we can't pick out the person who's guilty of a crime. We can't. So he imposed some of that thinking on this woman, Sandra Bland, who was angry. She was angry she'd been pulled over. She was angry that he was asking her to get out of the car. He was being, as you said, a bully who was fired.
And misinterpreted her anger as he thought she was dangerous. So this is a classic example of misreading strangers. And there, you know, that I begin and end with this question of policing, because I think these ideas that I explore in the book apply very powerfully to modern policing, that we're asking police in American society to do something very, very difficult and very, very ambitious, which is we're asking them to aggressively intervene in the daily lives of millions of Americans and make accurate judgments about what those Americans are up to and in so doing prevent crime. My argument in this book is that that is an impossible task.
But some people might say you went a long way to then characterize the Sandra Bland encounter as a mistake between strangers, when for them it is flat-out racism.
But they're the same thing, aren't they?
Are they?
What is racism? It is a strategy we use to characterize a stranger, right? It is one of a number of different ways in which one privileged group, a majority group, chooses to make sense of a minority group, of a group without power. So what I'm trying to do is to take that fundamental impulse and dig down a little bit and say, well, what are the components of those powerful and consequential racist reactions? And I think you can make a very strong case that this philosophy of policing that underlies things like the traffic stop of Sandra Bland, but also hundreds of thousands of other of these aggressive and ultimately, I think, socially malicious traffic stops by police officers, is a way in which policing has represented and codified racist attitudes. So why would you jump to a conclusion about a young African-American woman driving lawfully down a street in the middle of the day in a middle-class community in Texas? You'd only jump to that conclusion if you had in the back of your mind some larger sense about how implicitly dangerous young black people were, right? This is why, the project of the book was really to take something that is very broad and vague, like racism, and say, how is that codified in something like law enforcement?
Malcolm Gladwell, the new book is Talking to Strangers, What We Should Know About the People We Don't Know. Malcolm, thank you so much.
Thank you, Robin.
Our conversation with Malcolm Gladwell, his book Talking to Strangers, is now in paperback.